lives.
Court remains in session. Master Commissioner Christine Mendoza presiding.
Thank you. Please be seated. The next case on our docket this morning is case number 2016-1188, Seton Corp et al. Versus Tax Commissioner. For the appellant, Mr. Burnett. I'm sorry. Ms. Hussein.
May it please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honor, we are here today because there has been a misunderstanding of the law and a misapplication of the facts to the law in this case. In Ohio, sales tax is imposed on the purchase of employment services, and there are two entities involved in the transaction at issue in this case. Calcan, the purchaser of the employment service, which makes pet food at its plant, and Seton, the provider of the employment service, which furnishes workers at the pet food plant to work alongside Calcan employees to make the pet food. So Seton provided workers in three different positions: supervisor, line leader, and line workers. The sole issue in this case is whether all of these Seton workers in all three roles were provided to perform work or labor under the supervision or control of Calcan. And the facts show that Calcan did exercise control over the line workers and, in fact, direct control over the supervisors and line leads, and the board was wrong to find that there was no supervision or control as provided in the definition. And the board ignored basic evidence. In particular, I want to point out the testimony of Vicki Mayab. She's been a supervisor at this plant for 15 years. And she testified and gave specific examples about how Calcan managers communicate to her and generally how Calcan managers communicate to supervisors and line leads throughout the day and directly for all sorts of day-to-day issues. And then the supervisors and line leads are expected to pass that communication on to the line workers. So this chain of communication doesn't eliminate the fact that the directives and control are coming from Calcan. Calcan controls what needs to be done and how it should be done. And Seton supervisors manage the line workers at the direction of Calcan. So the three specific examples that I wanted to give to show that this direct control. One situation is if the ingredients for the product that's being made run out during a shift, and the next shift is scheduled for cleaning. So the product isn't going to be continued to be made for the remainder of the shift, but you have all these line workers, so what are they going to do if they're not making the product? Calcan managers then make the call. What should we send them to do something else, like cleaning, or do we send them home? So that direction comes from Calcan. Another example is if there is a problem during the manufacturing process, the equipment breaks down, or there's a can coming down the line that's leaking, so they need to address this problem. So the line is shut down temporarily. So what do the line workers do at that point? Calcan either tells them to clean or go home or do something else. So again, the direction comes from Calcan. And then the third example I want to give is if there's a, so Vicki Mayab, who has been there for 15 years, was there when new products were introduced. So if a new product is being introduced, she testified that sometimes she gets an email from Calcan, or sometimes Calcan just on the floor generally tells all the workers, all Seton workers, what the new plan is for the new product. So there are many examples of direct communication and control of the Calcan over the supervisors, and the board was wrong to deny it. So at this plant, there are three different types of products that are being made. There's canned product, pouch product, and flex line. So there's different lines with a slightly different process that's being done. So the Seton workers are hired to perform manual labor and tend to have little training, little skill that's involved, and usually a repetitive task, like putting tubs on the line or palletizing the product when it's done. So they're just part of the process of making the pet food alongside Calcan workers. And these terms, supervision or control, it's a broad definition using broad terminology on purpose. It's a broad tax. The General Assembly intentionally worded it that way, and then they provided certain exclusions from it that they wanted to provide. So if you're paying someone to provide laborers to do work in your factory, to do the thing that you do, to make the thing that you make at your factory, that's taxable. That is an employment service. Contrast that with the exclusion provided by the General Assembly for hiring subcontractors. in which someone is brought in to do work at your site that is not what you do, like an IT group for a computer upgrade or an electrician for wiring a room. Those are exempted, but Calcan is the expert in pet food making, and Seton is there to help them do that, not to do something else like IT or construction. And this definition is meant to capture all situations where someone does work for you but is paid by another.
Now, do I understand you correctly in your briefs that it's your primary contention that it's the manufacturing process through which Calcan exerts control over the Seton workers?
It is both through the manufacturing process, but then also like the examples. Well, yes, it is the manufacturing process is why the Seton workers are there. And through that and through the examples that I've given, there is direct communication throughout the day for all aspects.
Do you have any support, any authority to support that assertion?
Just all the case law generally, and I mean just the definition in general too, is just supervision and control is there hasn't been specific cases too many on the definition of the employment services. They usually end up focusing on the exclusions, but in Crew for You, the court found that the relationship between the crew they provided for, you know, where the crew needed to go and the schedule for the crew, and the court held that this met the definition of employment service, and they were then seeking, and then the analysis continued under the subcontractor exclusion in that case.
But in that case, didn't the, there was a three-way transaction, and the broadcasting company was not the service provider, but that was the another, in accordance with the statute, that exerted control over the workers, correct? So it was still based on what the workers were doing and not sort of a manual, sort of a process, an overarching process?
Well, so in this, there isn't an overarching process in this case. The board, the decision made it sound like that, but if you look at the actual facts and how the contract, the course of performance, and how the interaction worked between the Calcan and Seton, there was more than just a general overarching control of what's being done. There's day-to-day control over the line workers. And also, this definition is meant to capture, you know, situations where someone does work for you but is paid by another. And the payment of for this is for this service. So typically, a purchaser is outsourcing its payroll or HR functions, or even some supervisory functions of its workers, but you don't have to do all things with the workers for to qualify as supervision or control. Specifically, that's why you're paying for this service. There's always going to be some level of control exercised by the employment service provider over the workers, but unless you meet the exclusions, like the subcontractor exclusion, when you are not doing what I do to make money, you're doing something else for me on site, that's not taxable. The board turned this broad definition into an exclusion in its analysis when it was looking for direct control. And the board gave a lot of weight to the contract language in its analysis and its decision, but the evidence shows that the course of performance, which tells us how the contract was understood and applied, it did not reflect the contract language. So the contract says that Seton has exclusive right to control all Seton workers. But, you know, as we know from Ms. Mayeb's testimony, that wasn't the case. If Calcan actually, if we interpreted the contract language literally, that would mean that Seton would be deciding what product to make and how to make it and whether the workers work half the time or twice the time. And they're not making decisions like that. Calcan is. And in briefing, Seton claims that its purchases are not taxable under the subcontractor and permanence exclusions. We believe the court has no jurisdiction to address these exclusions from taxation, and remand is not appropriate, as this court's case law provides in Christian Church v. Ohio, Christian Church of Ohio, Leonard v. Lindley, and Navistar, that in order to confer jurisdiction over the exclusions, the board made you have to cross-appeal. And Seton failed to cross-appeal, and the board made no findings on these exclusions. The tax commissioner respectfully requests for the court to reverse the board's decision and find that the employment services at issue are taxable.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Burton for the taxpayers.
Your Honor, may it please the court. I am Ted Burnett. I'm here on behalf of Seton Corporation. Staff management is a reference that we have, which is a unit of Seton Corporation. They're the ones providing the people. And Mars Pet Care. There's a reference to Calcan. Calcan was merged out of existence a long time ago, but the Calcan seems to have survived for purposes of this case. We ask that you affirm the Board of Tax Appeals. The board got it right in this case. The board examined the witnesses and on the totality of the evidence made a very reasonable determination that there was no supervision and control or supervision or control. In response to the question about the idea that because Mars is the manufacturer and has ultimate responsibility, that that's control, the question was, is there support for it? The answer to that is no. You can't find support in that in this record that, for example, that the plant manager had anything to do with it, that the folks in Tennessee who do the scheduling had any supervision or control. And there's absolutely nothing in the case law that we have found, and apparently that the tax commissioner has found, that would support that position. It is a very dramatic decision, and it is a great departure from the concept of supervision and control. In the question of what is supervision and control, it's clearly facts and circumstances. And that's why it's important to focus on the fact-finding by the Board of Tax Appeals in this case. It is one where the court has deferred to the board on its findings. The board made findings listening to all the witnesses, Ms. Mayab and the two witnesses that we called, and it was very clear that there wasn't supervision or control by Mars Pet Care, that in fact the supervision and control was done by Seton Corporation. And the reason for that, too, is that it's an on-site management context, and that's different than a traditional type of employment service, because you bring people on site, not just somebody to check them in and make sure attendance is right, but they're actually going out and around and consulting with people and telling them what to do. That is to say that the people from staff management, Seton, the Vicki Mayabs of the world, are going around and supervising the people. And that's what makes this different from the other cases that we have. Because your standard of review on factual matters is deferential, because the board made findings that are entirely reasonable, you should affirm on that basis. What's really going on here is the difference between providing objectives and providing supervision and control. So what the evidence shows is that Mars is providing its objectives. We're going to do this much production of food. We're going to do these kinds of products. So Seton, go out there, get yourself ready so that you can support us on that. Those kinds of objectives are very different than the supervision and control. It would be like you engaging a plumber, coming into your house, and she's there, and you tell her, look, go over here. This is where the leak is. Fix it. I want it fixed. That's the kind of objective that is different than supervision and control. You're not supervising or controlling that plumber. Unless you think that's so far removed from what we have, in fact, we've seen that on audit, where the tax department has, in the manufacturing context with direct pay, has gone and said, well, this plumber, this electrician is being directed. And so that is not supervision and control. On the question of whether permanent placement is in front of you, I don't understand where the tax commissioner is coming from. It was preserved by the tax commissioner in his notice of appeal, beginning at paragraph 23 and extending on for several paragraphs. He talks about the fact that they're temporary in his view and not permanent. So there is no question, I think, that the question of permanency is before the court. And that is an equally valid way for the court to decide. Now, the court can either remand it back to the Board of Tax Appeals, have them make a determination on the first basis. And they made no determination because they didn't need to. The principle of there being no supervision and control was enough that they didn't need to get into permanent placement. But they could have. The evidence in this case was that, and it was very clear, everyone testified to this, that they do not want temporary people, that they do not hire, that is, Seton does not hire people for a defined duration of time. They never hire people to replace Mars people because they're in different pools and they don't operate together. There is no seasonality, even though the dogs and cats eat more in the winter time, that through their process and because of the shelf life of the items, they can smooth out the process. They testified there had never been a layoff throughout the entire audit period. And there's no basis, there's every basis for finding that these were in fact permanently assigned. We also looked at some of the people who had been there for long periods of time, and their testimony was that was the way it was supposed to work. Now, some people don't stay because the manufacturing process can be harsh, but the purpose was, in every case, to hire for a permanent basis. I think this is an easier case than the Excel case. I think that there's no, without seasonality, without any sort of duration, and the contract, the tax department admits that the contracts would allow for permanent placement. So there is every reason for this court to affirm the Board of Tax Appeals in this case, and we ask that the court does that. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Hussein, you have 5 minutes and 34 seconds remaining.
Looking at the example that my colleague gave about objectives versus supervision or control, and he gave the example of the plumber, and that's specifically what I was saying in my argument. So if you're bringing in a plumber, they're often doing something that's different than what your business is, and that's what the subcontractor exclusion is for. And often, with the subcontractor exclusion, the contracts would provide a certain directives or describe a specific job or task that's going to be completed, and that's not what we have here. The contract doesn't indicate any sort of language like that, and the Seton workers are not doing something different than what Calican themselves and their employees are doing. They're working side by side. They're not coming in to do a separate task that you just let them go and let them do their thing. It's like a assembly line kind of. They're doing part of the process side by side with everyone else. It's not unique or different.
But aren't they doing tasks different than the Calcan employees?
They're different in the way that they're very low skill and very simple, and it's easy to bring in and have a group do that without having to have any extra special training or anything like that. But it's not it's not something that Calcan own employees can't do. It's nothing unique in any way. And then addressing the permanency exclusion. So these individuals, when we looked at the timesheets that were provided as evidence to show that they were hired on a permanent basis. First, the contract language didn't address that they were hired on a permanent basis. And in fact, it actually used the word temporary in the contract. So that's indicative of the intention. But then looking further at the actual, dates of hiring and work of the individuals through the timesheets, there were large gaps in the employment, and there was the numbers of the employees were varying up and down greatly. So that indicates to us that they were not hired on a permanent basis. And also, we need to look at the intent of the employer, whether they intended on keeping the individuals on a permanent basis, and the individuals coming in too, did they intend on staying permanently? So the testimony was that a lot of times they have individuals coming from overseas, and that often they'll leave for months at a time to go overseas to visit families, and they're saying how this is nice that they're so flexible and allow them to leave and come back, but then that means that they're not hired on a permanent basis. First, if they're coming knowing that at some point they're planning on leaving for months, and then there's no guarantee in whether they're going to come back, then they're not hired on a permanent basis. And that doesn't support the permanence exclusion. And then the Excel case, that actually dealt with a different topic altogether. So in that case, they were making gift baskets, and the argument was that, this gift, product is necessarily going to have a seasonal nature to it, given the gifting season and stuff around holidays. So that decision and the analysis was focused on whether this counts as seasonal and whether seasonal is not temporary. So in this case, we don't have that argument. Our argument is that, you know, these large gaps and varying numbers indicate that they were not hired on a permanent basis.
And with regard to Excel, Ms. Hussein, would you agree that Excel both addressed and disposed of the burden of proof argument raised in your proposition of law, the first proposition of law?
The burden of proof argument. Well, the... Sorry, can you refresh
that it's lawful for the Board of Tax Appeals to conduct a de novo review of the tax commissioner's findings?
The Board of Tax Appeals, I'm sorry, I'm not sure.
That's okay.
I have nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties as to the decision.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.